I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's good, internet? It is March 6th, 2017, and you are listening to episode 45 of Waypoint Radio. We are live in Lobby 1 Vice HQ in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Joining me, we have a full cast today. Not a full cast.
Almost full. We can talk about that.
I mean, it could get fuller and fuller and fuller. If you bring in the whole Waypoint family, it would be massive. This room is too small for the whole Waypoint family.
That's true.
Joining me, Patrick Klepek, live on the internet.
I'm here, barely. I may turn into a ghost by the end of this podcast, though.
Funny story. When we were making our new Waypoint, the Hedgehog OC, one of the things we were going around the table and each of us.
Why do you think I'm sick?
Yep. It makes sense. It adds up.
We were adding likes and dislikes.
You're sick because you're not here experiencing the OC.
It's true.
For yourself.
Joy. We'd added likes for each of us. We'd added anime, robots, and sports.
I had sports.
And then Danica was like, what do we add for Patrick? And I said, ghosts.
Yep.
That's cool. Patrick's- acceptable. Acceptable.
Yeah.
I thought like I wanted to get specific. Also joining me, Danielle Riendo.
Hi.
And Danica Herod.
Hey.
Fresh from from the airport, fresh from GDC.
Fresh from GDC, baby.
San Francisco, the Bay.
I was getting hyphy with it.
Were you?
Yeah.
I heard Phil Fish did a DJ set.
Phil Fish had a DJ set, at that dot party. It was lit, as they say. It was lit, as the kids say.
Good.
As some would say.
As some would say.
Some might say it was lit.
Yes.
As Danielle gestured to a moment ago, I do want to make a quick announcement. He couldn't join us right this second because he's going through orientation or just waking up because he's on the West Coast.
Yeah.
But
we don't know.
Today is officially Rob Zachney's first day with us as a senior editor. You might know Rob Zachney from being on podcasts like Three Moves Ahead, Idle Weekend with Danielle Riendo.
It's a good one.
Gamers with Jobs. He's a great critic and freelance writer for years and years and years. He's done some other stuff over the past year, and I was really thrilled to bring him on board, and he will be contributing to all aspects of Waypoint in the near future.
I am so happy. It's Monday, which always sucks, but like I'm happy today. It's Rob Day.
That means we should get a cake.
People can expect more esports, I would say. Which
more
is very exciting.
Probably more strategy games. So for me, I came to Rob via Three Moves Ahead, which is a podcast on the Idle Thumbs Network, where he kind of took over as semi-host for over the last couple of years. And his input there had always been really smart and really thoughtful. And I eventually was lucky enough to do a few episodes of that with him. I did a couple of episodes of Idle Weekend with you and it was very clear for me very early on that I thought he would be a really great fit for us. And so, hey, very, very soon you'll be hearing his dulcet tones either on this show. We're still figuring out a lot of things. There's no announcements to make about Idle Weekend.
Podcast stuff.
As far as I'm concerned, he can keep doing whatever he wants in terms of podcasts, but we'll definitely want to also be able to use that talent here. Because he's great.
He does have a great podcast voice.
Shout out to Rob. Good luck with orientation.
Enjoy.
Good luck.
I hope they give you a decent computer. I told them to give you a good computer. We'll see.
Yeah, fingers crossed for you, buddy.
The IT folks out in the LA office assured me that he was getting the best computer that they have.
Okay.
So
good.
So
great.
That is still a wide range of possibilities.
I know.
We'll see how it goes. Companies, man.
Companies.
So besides Rob, the other big news of the week was obviously the Nintendo Switch came out, and then also GDC happened.
There
were lots of cool things that were coming out of GDC. Tanika, as our woman on the ground there, What did you get up to?
So, well, first of all, I wasn't originally going to be the only one there.
That's true.
That's
you and
true.
You. We're both going to go.
And shout outs to some of our freelancers. Kate Gray was there. Yeah. Stephen Wright was there.
Joseph Noop was there.
Yeah, there's exactly. A bunch of people who've written for us or who will write for us were there. Shout outs to all of those people. But from the core staff, Danica was holding it down.
That's right.
I made business cards with our art by Stephen Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I didn't use the Vice art. I went rogue. I made some business cards and I went. I didn't show up till Wednesday because I was spending some time with my family. I'm originally from there. And I went and checked out Alt-Control GDC.
Oh, that like is the best. Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
that is a lot
so
of fun.
Good.
Tell people what that
so,
is.
So Alt-Control GDC is a little set up where there are a bunch of games that have alt controllers. So,
oh, right, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So I played, there's like a space game where you are in a cardboard box. So perfect. Like the cardboard box is the controller, and that was very fun. There were some other games that are like multiplayer where you have like a tube and another person has to like tap the tube. And
tap the tube.
You gotta tap your tube.
There's a bunch of stuff going on. I hung out at Mild Rumpus a little bit and just like...
Oh, is there a second less wild Rumpus now?
Yeah, like in the...
That's good.
In the South Hall? I don't remember. I always get confused. There's like a little section where people kind of like just chill and watch like streams up on the on the TV. So I hung out there for a little bit. I had a bunch of meetings like to go to like the big events. I ended up not going to because it was like not really super in our wheelhouse to like cover
sure.
those. And also, I kind of just wanted to check out the games, like, on the floor. So I went and I checked out Snake Pass, which I'm super excited for. It's like Banjo-Kazooie, but you're a freaking
snake.
That's
a sumo digital game. And
what
those
is,
are the folks
what's
who
the
made...
Name of it?
Snake Pass.
Snake Pass.
Snake Pass. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So it's a platformer. You are a snake. You have a little hummingbird. It's literally Banjo-Kazooie, but you're a snake.
Is it 2D or 3D?
It's 3D.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
I know you're a big fan of those.
Big fan. Big fan
We've
of a
this,
good platformer.
We don't disagree because I believe you that you like them and you believe me that I do not.
Very much so.
I love
an agreement there.
Right.
Exactly.
That is
well,
an agreement.
As long as you don't actually like Donkey Kong 64, right? Like, we're not that far down
that,
the road.
In my mind, that uh-huh. game is interesting because of how broken it is
okay.
in a long line of really good 3D platformers
yep.
and like 3D platformer adjacent games. And that's like the one dog of the bunch, basically.
So. I'm with you in that I thoroughly enjoyed those games when I was younger. I refuse to replay them because I think my illusions would be shattered.
Yeah,
I really
worry.
Like them too. I really like platformers also. So you will like this.
I'm probably going to love it because I did replay Banjo-Kazooie in Rare Replay.
Oh,
and
nice.
Most of Banjo-Kazooie
and it held
again
out.
As well.
Oh, okay.
And,
so
I still love it.
You're in the clear.
So.
Well,
I'm
we can
clear,
we can play it. We can play it at PAX together.
Yeah, let's play
you
at PAX.
You and me will go.
We're gonna have
you can
a
go
fun
off
time.
And do your own thing. We'll go and
go
you can,
play.
You can play your RPGs.
You
or
can
something.
Play your damn Fire Emblem.
Why go try to find some sort of Far Cry 2 kiosk in the corner?
I promise.
So I played Snake Pass. Very fun. The controls are really cool because you're like slithering around, and you kind of have to like slither up.
So you are a snake.
You are a snake. You're okay. playing as a snake. You have to slither up things and collect gems, and it's very fun.
I'm also excited about that because it's I was trying to allude to Sumo Digital, and those are the folks who made the really, really good Sonic All-Stars Racing
mm-hmm.
games
yeah.
and a bunch of other really good stuff. So it's like both a cool concept that I'm on board with and also like, oh, okay, it's them. They know
right.
what they're doing.
You know,
they
know
what is that game coming out? Because then that, like, Yooka-Laylee is only like a month and a half out too, which is also a Banjo-Kazooie style.
I'll do a little Google
platformer.
Groovy.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's coming out this year.
Yooka-Laylee is April 11th.
Yep,
and Snake
my birthday.
Pass.
My birthday.
Snake
my birthday.
Pass is a
Wait,
hill
your
in Derbyshire.
Is April 11th.
That it crosses the Pyrenees between
oh.
Glossop and the Lady Blower Reservoir.
Oh,
Lady Bower Reservoir, not the Lady Blower Reservoir.
Lady Blower Reservoir.
I can tell you its elevation.
Bye.
Please.
Anyway, I don't know when Snake Pass comes out.
I'm on the Snake Pass website right now. This looks like a Rare game. Like, it just the colors, the very bright.
You're gonna love
sort
it.
Of
got a lot
You're
of emails about Snake Pass.
Me
coming
too.
To the Switch.
And this is a thing that is this true for you too, Patrick? That there's
it makes
like
you not want to play it.
March
28th.
Oh my God, March 28th/29th.
Yeah, it does make me almost not want to not play it. But there's like a perfect. There's like the golden ratio of exactly the right amount of emails.
Snake Pass is not getting it right.
No, they're going too many.
There is such a thing as overhype, but...
And there's such a thing as underhype. Like, there are games, there are definitely games that don't get coverage because they're not doing any outreach.
Nobody heard of it.
Hollow Knight looks really dope. And the only reason I know that is because, like, three people have told me specifically, oh, hey, you should check this thing out. And, like, no one has ever told any of us about that game in a PR capacity.
Yeah, like, Hollow Knight's, like, reach out to me was like, hey, you wrote something nice at Kotaku. Here's a Steam key. And it was like, this game is out? Like, what? Right. When did this happen?
Right.
Oh, my God.
Because that's one of those things where, like, you in the press will try to put some time aside to check something out if you know that it's coming up. What else did you check out on GDC?
I checked out the floor, the multiple floors. I walked around a bunch. There was, like, a really weird Paranormal Activity booth that I think was, like, promoting the Vibe. It was very strange.
Yeah, there's some sort of VR thing that's coming out on Early Access the next couple of weeks. It's supposed to be bad.
Yeah, I don't think it came across right. I spent a lot of time in the press room because there was Wi-Fi.
Fair.
But I did meet up with Steve Gaynor and Carla Zimonja, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, from Fulbright.
Right. From Fulbright,
yes.
Yeah.
And I played the Tacoma demo that I've seen online a bunch of times, but it was still good to get my hands on that.
What did you think of that? So, tell us, because I actually had been basically, not avoiding, but I haven't gone out of my way to spoil myself on that game, but I am curious about what that was like and what your takeaway was.
Well, going into it, so I played Gone Home, and I played it again before I went and met with them, and that game, you know, was like a pretty huge thing as far as, like, queer media goes, you know, like...
I think it's still one of the best.
Yeah, like, still one of the best.
Kind of ever across a lot of media, so...
And you say that as someone who, as you've noted, has reviewed a lot of lesbian
films. Many years of reviewing lesbian films before going to that, and I was like, oh, wow, this kicks all of their asses.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as someone who is, like, queer and has gone through, like, coming out, and my little sister is gay, and, like, it hit very close to home, so going into Tacoma, I was really looking forward to what they were going to do next, and it's very, very, very different. The first person you meet is a woman who is the head of this crew on a spaceship. You don't meet her, you meet her skeleton.
That's a huge difference.
Skeletons in Tacoma, confirmed.
It's like a skeletal, like, it's not a skeleton. Like, you don't just meet, like the share zone.
Yeah, I was thinking of a dancing skeleton. So anything less is going to be a disappointment now.
When is the share zone game coming? I need the share zone.
I need it. It doesn't matter. I need it. Yeah, so it was very cool. The controls are a bit different. You are...
First person exploration.
It's not like as linear as Gone Home is. Like Gone Home is like, oh, here's this hallway. We're going to go here. We get a key. We go here. There's like multiple ways to get codes to access different rooms. And you can go to different rooms and still kind of follow along on the same path.
And the big thing this just hit me is like, oh, you met a person. Which in Gone Home is not the case, right? Like, Gone Home delivers the story through artifacts.
You don't meet, but, like, you're not just hearing journal entries.
There are people interacting through, like, it's like a holograph or something like that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So you control the main person in the game, whose name is Amy, and she's, I'm assuming, going to check out, like, what happened on this ship. But another cool thing is there's a ton of voice acting in this game, so, like, in Gone Home, the journal entries are kind of like sporadic and like you get them every couple of rooms. In the demo alone, there was like dialogue 70% of the time. Yeah. And it's a crew of six and they have voice actors for every single crew member. So
I'm very curious about the balance of that stuff. So like, I mean, obviously, I guess Steve Gaynor is a friend of the site at this point. It's fair to say
we
are 1 to 2 degrees of separation away at this point. But still, I want to be clear, like I am very curious about that because one of my beefs with some of the Horizon lore dump stuff was that's a game that has lots of really interesting lore. But the way that it tells it to you is just like, oh, settle in. Here's 30 minutes of audio logs in a row. And that balance can be really hard to get, and that presentation of like, do I have to stay in the same place while this audio log is playing? Is a single audio log so long that it feels like I'm trapped in it, and I want to be exploring stuff like that? So I'm curious to see
From what I remember, the times I've seen that game, like the idea of missing parts of the hologram, like video diaries, is like built into the design of the game. If you decide to go, like they don't stick in one room like they do in Horizon. Like Horizon is like it's two people talking in a room, and so you're stuck in this room, and as the player, you feel constrained and bored and tired.
Yes.
Whereas my understanding of what I've seen of Tacoma and what they're aiming for is like one character is going to go walk down this hallway. And if you follow them, you might get access to a key code or insight into a conversation that didn't make sense in the room in a different direction. So the decisions you make as the player to follow different parts of the hologram are actually you making choices about the narrative sort of pieces you want to follow. And then you need to reload those holograms to like start putting together what it all means, which sounds like a fascinating way to approach the idea of sort of like the voice entries that a lot of other games get wrong.
Yeah, and that's like exactly how it played. So you get an AR log, you play it. If you leave the room, you'll hear another conversation. You can pause it, you can rewind it and start it over in a different room and hear another conversation.
That part, that little bit is like super
smart.
That's
huge.
Yeah.
And you have a story up on the site that actually gets into your impressions.
Yeah, it went up today. So it's up there. It's up there. It's very cool.
This is not your Waypoint debut, but it is maybe your debut of like a proper reported feature.
Interviews type
situation.
Yeah. I hope to do more now that I have more time.
So. Yeah. Thank you for that.
I'm
excited for it.
While you were off doing GDC stuff and meeting people.
I have no idea what you were doing while I was gone. I didn't see anything on Twitter about
Breath of the Wild, the new Zelda game. I think I've given my take at this point a billion times. I'm going to try to contain my enthusiasm because I'm really just curious now that Danielle and Patrick, you both played the game, like, What is your takeaway so far?
Oh, man. Patrick, you want to go first?
Yeah, I mean, I think the moment that sort of solidified my excitement for the game was, when you start the game off for the first hour, a couple of hours in sort of a contained environment, and then you have to get access to a paraglider item that allows you to sort of escape the section that you're confined to. And the moment that I got that paraglider and then I'm, gliding off to the big world that's out there for you. Like, whether this is scripted or not, and you'll be able to correct me if it's not pretty quickly, is that when I was paragliding out, I just happened to be paragliding right towards a group of horses, and I jumped off my paraglider onto the back of a horse, and like that was my first like encounter going out into the wide world. And was
not
like,
scripted.
Oh,
not scripted at
that
all.
That just happened.
Oh shit, game. Yeah. And then I immediately jumped off the horse and it ran away. But that part was pretty incredible, and like that little moment seemed to encompass like a lot of
totally
the other moments I've had in the game that weren't as grand, like weren't as like oh my god, but seemed to sort of like wrap up what is interesting about what's happening in Breath of the Wild.
The similar thing happened. I was showing the game to Alex Cook, who did our logo, our Waypoint logo design. There's a lot of great design stuff here at Vice. Someone is dragging furniture around. not a thing. That is great advice. And I did a thing where I was like doing the shield surfing down a hill, and like came off of a jump and then landed in a field and was still doing the shield surfing as horses began to like flank me and speed up past me and like slowly overtake me at different speeds. And Alex was like, oh, this is a Studio Ghibli game. Like, that's what you're doing. And, like, this is like a Miyazaki. This is like Spirited Away or Princess Mononoke or something. Mm-hmm. Or Nausicaä. And like, yes. That is what this visual style and feeling of like breadth. Breath.
You are so small. You are so small in this like huge world of
a wonder.
million other things.
So you're grinning from ear to ear, Danielle. I'm guessing you're also pretty high on this.
I was a little bit scared about this game because I'm a big Zelda fan and I like the linearity of Zelda games.
Yeah.
At least when they're done well, like a good dungeon, like makes you feel like so incredible and strong and
the water
smart.
Temple.
Yeah.
The water temple
that
makes
water
me feel
temple
so good.
Makes it feel great going on levels to levels. So I was a little scared about this, and I am 100% in love with this game. Mm-hmm. I am absolutely, like, it's been maybe since Mass Effect 2 that I've actually been, like, this in love with a game.
I've been struggling to figure that out also.
It's like, incredible.
What's the last time I was this hyped? So.
And I think part of it is the way I'm playing is so ideal. So I'm actually playing on a Wii U. I'm playing the Wii U version on the gamepad. And it's fine and works and is beautiful as well. And my girlfriend is sitting next to me. Sometimes our dog is between us. Sometimes one of our cats is between us. And they are obsessed with it, too. They're watching on the screen. And she's playing. I'm playing. And we're, like, helping each other, you know. My girlfriend doesn't love puzzles. So there are times she's like, baby, what do you think? And I'm like, oh, if you do this and then if you do that. And, I put my game down where I'm doing a puzzle. And we together kind of work through a puzzle together. Yeah. And then sometimes she'll be like, oh, my God, you have to see this. Like, look at where I am. Look at what I'm doing. We're doing that back and forth, like, in the same game on two different platforms. And it's been the way it's kind of like a cool story
bliss generator.
It is the most perfect vision of, like, dorky domestic bliss that exists, basically.
One of my favorite things is Patricia, your girlfriend, made a tweet the other day that was just like, what's the most interesting way you've died in, in Breath of the Wild so far? And I retweeted it, and the responses that we've both been getting for it have just been like so, so good. Just like lots of like getting hit by a ram off of a mountaintop or
That was the campster one. Yeah, that was so
good. That was the campster one. That was really fucking good.
It was really good.
Oh, shout out to campster.
It was like making it all the way to the top of a mountain because you have a stamina meter in this game if you haven't played it. So getting to the top of a mountain is actually sort of an achievement in this game. And then a ram just hit him in the face and he rolled all the way down the mountain and died.
So good. It's beautiful. And it's like those sorts of things just do happen nonstop. We're waiting to get the setup together before streaming today. And I was like, oh, I'll hop in really quick and maybe we'll do a quick quest. I did one of the shrine quests, not just a shrine, but like to locate a special shrine. And on the way, I ended up on the top of this like snowy mountain. And I was just talking to Tim, like, it was like, oh, yeah, it's no big deal. Just, like, whatever's going to happen. Like, I'm just doing some Zelda. Just can't get out of hand. And then a bunch of little ice dudes pulled themselves up from the snow and, like, shook themselves at me. And I was like, just calm down. Like, don't.
It's fine. Everything's
fine. And none of my weapons were built to deal with them. Like, sometimes you can break them apart with things like sledgehammers or something that does, like, heavy blunt damage, I guess.
Yeah.
But I didn't have anything that was strong enough to do that. And so I started trying to do the bomb trick. And then I realized that there was one of the chameleon-type enemies that can
Lizalfos.
I was like, oh, hey, Tim, look, that guy. Look at this guy. He's hiding. And then the other guy surrounded me and punched me. I was like, all right, calm down. And then Lizalfos jumped at me. He's like, all right, this is getting a little out of hand. And then one of the little stone guys hit me, and I fell down the entire mountain. And then, like, I dusted myself off and got up, and then there was a rhino coming at me. And I was like, all right, stop. Just chill out, please.
Game.
Let me breathe.
Yeah.
And that those sorts of things just happen all the time, and it's I'm really digging it still. Like, so I'm post-game. I'm still just going through and cleaning up little side quests and really loving their little riddles in the open world and all of that stuff. So
you know what I can't stand, though, is the controls, man. The controls bother me a lot.
I really
– So there are issues with how Breath of the Wild maps controls, and it should just give you – like, it allows you to swap the stamina and the jump button. And it's like, hey, game, as long as you're doing that, let me just map the whole controller how I want. But
because their Switch is still bad. They're off. So,
ABXY, my friend. ABXY is driving me nuts right now.
So, Y is the jump button by default, right? Uh-huh. And B, which is underneath, which is like vertically down below, is sprint. And the thing I want from every game is I want to be able to hold the sprint button down and then just use the same thumb pressure to hit the jump button while I'm running. And you cannot set that up. It's impossible to do that.
For me, it's less even less that. It's that I cannot get the Xbox control setup out of my head. And so I want to remap it so that I can just have, even though I realize that the letters are in a different configuration on the Switch, I want to map it so it's like the Xbox One controller, because at least with the PlayStation, I don't confuse it because it's a triangle instead of a Y. But here, a Y is still a Y, but the Y is in a different place, and I have not been able to, at least in the 6 or 7 hours I've played, to like map that enough to where it's not super frustrating, because on my PC, I largely use an Xbox One controller. So it's not as though I'm like just leaving that controller behind and can just kind of like remap my mentally for it. And I find that part really frustrating. I would wish they would allow you that some sort of customizability there.
I did the same thing that you just did. I said that jump was on the Y button. It's not. It's on the X button, and the X button is the top button on...
Yeah.
Please, Nintendo, just let us remap the controls.
Well, I'm gonna borrow the Office Switch and borrow Zelda and take it home.
You should.
I'm going to
play some Zelda. Get some Zelda going.
I need to.
The last thing I want to say about it is that it does things with pacing that I think are exactly what Zelda needed.
Really?
And I won't make a fresh Breath of Air joke, I promise. But it really
does. I
think
you just did. You can't say it. You can't talk about the joke and then say,
I did it.
But I didn't do it.
I did it. I'm really proud of myself. But it actually does.
I'm not going to insult your hair, but I'm like, okay, well, what?
You're already in the mood for it. Just, I understand. Whatever, I tell my joke, I'm very proud of myself. Uh-huh. So, the problem with the most recent Zelda games has been the sort of cruft and the weight of so much stuff and pacing problems and having the first couple of hours be miserable and hand-holdy and not fun in the slightest. And this completely solves all that by actually giving you a little bit of freedom right from the beginning. Like, right from the jump, you can go to these little shrines. Even though it's a contained area, you can go to all those different shrines in whatever order you want. You can actually go off, screw around, and explore, and that's actually fun. I like that this entire world is actually fun to explore.
Yeah.
It's not just, well, I'm going to get 7 collectibles. It's, oh my God, I don't know what little tiny puzzle will be over here. Right. I don't know what little Korok will be hidden over here. I don't know what ram is going to throw me down a mountain over here. Yeah. It's actually offering sort of fresh and interesting and weird things no matter where you go. And mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. completely solves the pacing problem that Zelda has had for the last 10-ish years, yeah. let's say.
Yeah. It's so easy to just... It's surprisingly for me consumable in this portable short-term way where I can on a bus ride say, what was up with those weird statues that were all facing each other in the desert? Let me go see what that's about and either make progress on a puzzle or even solve it completely. Yeah. Or like the one that you saw me do today, which is like, oh, there's something up with that tree on the top of that mountain, and that's all I'll say about it. But like, and there's a little puzzle or a little riddle attached to it. I really like a lot of the little riddly ones that end yeah. up being like, oh, once the heart is set ablaze, blah, 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 phase, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. yep.
And like,
my favorite riddle.
Blah, 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 phase. And being able to like work those out over time where it's like, I had one that I did. I went home to Jersey over the weekend, and I started one on the bus ride home that had to do with – it seemed in my head to have to do with a clock or like the directional based on a clock. And I just turned it over in my head over the entire weekend. And then on Sunday right before I left, I was like, yeah, I got it.
That's
and that is
it.
Really cool. And again, feels like the sort of adventuring stuff that in other games is abstracted out to a dice roll or to like just a scripted sequence or something like that. Whereas this was like, oh no, the solution is the reward is always just in the world waiting for you to find. And you could theoretically find it without even doing the quest line. It yeah. just happens to be that the quest line puts you on the right path to getting the thing.
That's Can so we? Good. Can we call this podcast episode Link and Build?
Yes, we can.
Hey, yes, Nintendo, can. I fuck with your vision. I'm trying to Link and Build. What is what about?
I'm not talking to you.
Patrick's face right now.
I'm not.
Hey, Zelda, I fuck with your vision. It's time to Link and Build. That's pretty good.
I like that.
That's pretty good.
I like that.
The internet is a bad place.
Anyway.
You should play this game. I'm really curious what you
think. I
need
to play it. I was going to buy a Switch. Mm-hmm. I told Austin, hey, give me your second Switch.
That happened.
Let me buy it from you. And then
a week ago.
Yeah.
You were like, no, I changed my mind.
I'm saving up money for an important thing. So I'm like, oh, do I want to be a responsible adult or not?
Do you have a Wii U?
No.
Right. So you were going to like... Oh. Be a responsible person. And so I like didn't cancel it right away. In fact, another friend came to me and was like, oh, word, I'll buy your Switch. But then they wouldn't let me reroute where it was shipping to. So I was like, I'll just cancel it. And that day you were like, oh, actually, can I? And I was like,
because I got a bunch of money for a show I did. So I was like, oh, can no. I buy it? And
nope.
then, yeah, it's all right.
I don't know, internet.
Do we have Zelda for the office?
I don't know if we have Zelda for the office.
Good question.
That's a good question.
We should ask our friends at Nintendo, I guess.
Yeah, we'll yeah. see. All right. I think it is time to take a dip into the question bucket. I know, Danielle, you don't have a lot of time left.
Got like 10 minutes.
Yeah, like 10 minutes. We can at least get into to something here at the top of the old bucket here. All right. So this comes in.
That's a long question.
Yeah, I should.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pick a shorter one. It's not that long. This is just formatted such that it looks mm-hmm. long. This comes in from Jonas from Germany. Who says,
Jonas from Germany.
When you explained the concept of a Disney's weenie in the podcast recently, I don't know if you caught that one.
Yeah.
All right. I thought I had to tell you on this occasion how great it is what you bring to video games. It's very sweet. I also vaguely recall a moment, was it a dev interview? I can't remember, where you kind of emphasized that you're interested in listeners, too, who might not be playing games every day or not anymore, people who used to play but still follow the discourse for whatever diverse reason. I think it's great how you keep the discourse open like that. I have a hard time sometimes trying to explain to others how, for me, the mere walking through fog in Silent Hill has a poetic power on its own, and I am thinking a lot lately about these other worlds, atmosphere, bubbles, etc., and their capacity to transport us to these places. A couple of weeks ago, I gave a presentation on the architecture of fun / theme park / video games / zoos / casinos / brothels, etc., in an architecture seminar, and I was thinking about Foucault's heterotopia, quote-unquote, the other place, places in our places with different sets of rules. The architecture of these places has a lot of similarities, and the most obvious to me is the entrance area. Often they resemble doors of sacred buildings. For example, Jurassic Park's gate compared to a sacred entrance. Check out the pylons on either side of both, and then it's a link to a couple of images of like ancient mm-hmm, gate mm-hmm. pylons across the world, basically. These gates are entrances, not only as an entry, but also entrance, as in enchantment, or like to entrance someone. And that made me think of initiations, how maybe lost ancient ethnic rites come back in new forms like video games, and about how the designs or theming or architecture of these places often resemble the classic stages of designs and of initiation rites. Think about like an Alice in Wonderland, where first she's separated from society, and then those images like the King Kong door, like the King Kong gates opening or Jurassic Park's opening or Resident Evil's doors opening or all of that stuff, and then being stuck in between in that liminal state and then going off on a quest, whether that's in Zelda or in Silent Hill. It's just like the thing that here is really interesting is just like all of this isn't just a thing that is happening in Zelda. That sort of like sightline stuff isn't just in Zelda, and it isn't just in
designed theme parks.
Yeah. It is something that has a history in places that were meant to be religious, have religious significance, have cultural significance, and it's interesting to see how those have been kind of secularized and turned, or in fact, these spaces have a degree of, they feel magical because of this history. It's really interesting. So thank you for writing in, Jonas. I think that's really an interesting point I hadn't thought of. A thing that I thought about a lot was, and cut from my Zelda thing, was I've spoken before about this philosophical concept of the aura that Walter Benjamin writes about, which is that he kind of splits artwork into two types. Erratic artwork and non-erratic artwork, A-U-R-A-T-I-C. Kind of stuff that's made by machines doesn't have an aura because there's no original. There's just like a poster. A poster is just a poster. Your poster and my poster are the same poster as far as we're concerned. Your poster doesn't have any value that mine doesn't until life, for whatever reason, maybe gives it some value. Yours gets signed or something. But before mechanical reproduction, all artwork had this notion of an aura because it was its own thing. The Mona Lisa is the Mona Lisa. You have to go to the Mona Lisa.
Right.
And one of the things about Zelda that works so well for me is that's a game where it feels like the things in the world, the distance, there's that distance in the world where no matter where you're going, you have to travel there to some degree. And so it's always just out of reach.
Everything is singular in a particular
And everything
way.
Is singular,
yeah.
right. Like
yeah.
Even the puzzles that can replicate themselves, even the Korok puzzles where like, oh, it's another Apple Korok puzzle. There's something unique about it every
yeah.
time, whether it's just like where it's at or like the presentation or like sometimes it's not an apple. Sometimes it's a honeydew or whatever. And I think that brings a lot of a sense of magic to it for
yeah.
sure. So thank you for writing in, Jonas. This comes in from Hunter, and this is, I think, a pretty interesting question, which is he says that he is probably the opposite of the anti-Zelda person who wrote in, a big Nintendo first-party fan who's also drawn to their new drive to fit games better into a lifestyle not focused on them. I live with the dread that Nintendo is on its way out the door because the gaming community has decided that if they put their foot down on Nintendo hardware, they will cave and go third-party like Sega did. So I definitely hear that a lot with a lot of gaming fans who say, I wish Nintendo games would just come out on PC or on PS4 or Xbox One or whatever. These fans know the sales figures. They know what motivates third parties. Are they using this knowledge and their dollars then to try to create the above stated outcome? The individual who emailed you was so angry that people may be influenced to go away. He didn't want it. It made him lash out, or at least to troll you. Is this fair to members of the industry or customers outside of the mainstream gaming culture? Gamers have often pined for the one console future, and I feel like they are constantly trying to steer the industry in that direction, whether it's for the good of the industry or for the other subsets of players. I'm interested to hear your thoughts about whether or not the enthusiasts of the gaming industry, knowing how the businesses will behave and using that influence to the industry, is good or bad. So basically, like, it comes down to, and the subject of this email was, do gamers know too much about the industry? Like, are the people who play games, too inside.
I think we're ascribing way too much motivation to how people buy games.
Yeah. Do you think that's just like a kind of more passive feeling?
Yeah.
Like
the Dreamcast was not a success because people didn't buy it, not because people were like, ha ha, we'll get Sonic on our PlayStation. It's
like, yeah.
You know, if I mean, like, it's we would that be organized. Like the one console future is an interesting idea, and the PC is the closest you get to that, especially as more and more console publishers are, you know, like look at Square, like Final Fantasy 15 is probably going to be on the PC sometime later this year. Mm-hmm. Like the new Nier game is coming like a couple of days after the launch on PlayStation 4. So in some ways, like this one console future is happening. It's happening on the PC for all games that aren't Nintendo, essentially, right? Like all games, all Xbox One games published by Microsoft are now games for Windows games on the PC. Lots of PlayStation games that aren't first party games like are on the PC. But this idea that you're gonna like if Nintendo makes games for other platforms, it will be because it's in their best interest and that's the direction that makes sense for the company. And I think that has something to do with people not buying their games, but not because of a concerted change.org effort to get people to stop buying.
Yeah.
Well, let's broaden it out though. Let's maybe broaden out Hunter's point though, and wonder if like what's the benefit of this sort of insidery knowledge and like NeoGAF posting and like what is the thing that players that fans get by knowing so much about what like by knowing for instance that the first Tomb Raider reboot needed to sell X amount of copies but only sold Y X minus 5 million copies or whatever.
I mean, I think a tiny vocal minority, meaning NeoGAF, meaning people who are super fans of websites, that sort of thing. It's part of your identity. Mm-hmm. It's part of your identity.
It's
as
like a lust for knowledge and like information and like transparency.
I mean, there are sports fans who are so obsessed with, their given team that they would say they have some identity with that team. They say, us, we won that game, instead of this team of multimillionaires, amazing athletes, basically, like, won the actual game. But, like, we did it. It was part of us. Like, I think it's honestly, like, an identity thing. It's, like, part of what makes you.
The thing that I've often – when we've had this talk before about sports, for instance, is that, like – it's easy to identify a quick commonality there, which is, we all live in New York. Like, yes, we're being ridiculous. Yes, we're being like shitty to other cities or whatever. But we're trying to build an identity around physical proximity that goes beyond neighborhood, that goes beyond ethnic mix, that goes beyond gender, this is not the case. Often these groups of these fandoms are in fact still split among racial and gendered lines and income lines.
Yeah.
But the idealized version of it is we can all root against the Patriots. Right. That's the idea.
Yep.
Like whatever. I don't care if you're from Brooklyn or Queens. I don't care if you're in the Bronx or Staten Island. Fuck Tom Brady.
Yep.
That's supposed to be.
We're gonna get
promise.
Some angry emails after that one.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Oh, Patriots fans, boo-hoo! Your life is so hard. Way so hard that you got to write into every sports show or video game show.
And say, that Tom Brady?
I can't. I don't have enough fingers for all my Super Bowl rings. I'm gonna put new fingers on my hand.
That's the ideal, right? Is Patrick can really just
Patrick is the ideal.
Patrick is the ideal.
I agree. in all facets of what that implies.
Yeah. But we all knew that was
the
coming.
Ideal of what that is. And it's hard for me to see that same motivation behind, like, the people who write in and say that we're Nintendo fanboys or whatever.
Right.
And, like you don't have – the thing you did that has proximity is you bought the PlayStation 4 instead of buying the Xbox One or PC or the Switch or
there's
whatever.
There's an uncomfortable – economic element to this. I guess maybe it's closer to say something like specific music fans, people who really love a particular band, something that's not tied to geography or not tied to any, other factor. Like people who love a thing. They love the experience they get from a thing, who then identify as people who love this thing.
Right.
Gamers. I would also say that the video game industry is one of the least transparent media industries around. There was an exchange happening between Simon Parkin and Jason Schreier on Twitter earlier today or last night that was the two of them talking about different instances in which they asked was a game company, how many people are working on this game? And the company refused to actually acknowledge how many people working on the game. And so I actually think a lot of what we see when people are so-called experts on places like Reddit or NeoGAF or even ourselves. Like, we're actually operating on imperfect information in which the video game industry refuses to be transparent about very basic facts, which leads people to think that they know more than they actually do, which leads people to do those things that you see us shared on Twitter all the time where it's like, oh, why don't they just add online multiplayer to this game? Like, it's super easy to do. Like, I've seen how easy Unity is. And it's like that, like, displays like a gross ignorance of the difficulties of adding or doing anything to a video game. So I think actually the video game industry does itself like a grave disservice, because by not being more transparent, you actually engage a bunch of people to be like willingly ignorant because the only information they have is deeply flawed.
Yeah.
Danielle, you have to bounce.
I have to run.
I think we're going to do one more question wrap-up, right. So thank you for joining us. Danielle, where can people find you?
You can find me, Danielle R.I. on Twitter, and they can find me at this beautiful website.
NewEnglandPatriots.com/Danielle Riendo.
I don't even like the Patriots. I just grew up in a place where that is the religion. It's the only thing. That's the only thing. Like, I don't actually care how they do. It's just like, I keep up with it so I can talk to my dad about it.
You go on Christmas and Easter.
Yeah, yes. I go on Christmas and Easter. And the Super Bowl. I like football. I just don't care as much about team divisions. Gotcha. That's a whole other. Uh-huh. I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Our last question comes in from Kevin, who does not give a location. So I'm going to say he's from London.
Okay.
So
yeah.
It's Kevin from London. Hey. After listening to your talk about your strange Breath of the Wild related troll encounter, it got me thinking about whether I'm enjoying Breath of the Wild more because it's Zelda, and more because it's Zelda, and if the same applies to other games I enjoy. A particular example I can look to that I'm sure of is licensed games like Pandemic Star Wars Battlefront and the Dragon Ball Z Budokai series. I have complete confidence that I like those games more and played them more because they are skinned with the looks and sounds of Star Wars and Dragon Ball Z. Now I'm wondering if I'm enjoying Breath of the Wild more because it has characters and a world that I already have a fondness for. Even though it's clearly a great game independent of the setting, would I enjoy it less if I weren't Link fighting bokoblins and instead were some new character fighting some new monsters? Is this something you ever run into in your own critical examination of games? If so, how do you take it into account when working out how to convey your feelings about the game? Thanks. Keep up all the cool stuff you're doing.
I think that's a really good point. Yeah. I think we're emotionally tied to franchises, characters, worlds that we've been a part of. I think it would be, you are enjoying that game more because you've enjoyed Zelda in the past. Like, in the same way that, I want to see a new Friday the 13th movie. Like, some other creature could kill those damn campers the same way, but I like it when Jason does it. So give me another one of those. And so I think that's part of, I think what we were talking about with the sort of how the trappings of Breath of the Wild, its design ethos, is sort of mainstreaming some ideas that have been happening in other games, where if you were to take this and put it, like, just into a Far Cry 2 sequel, people wouldn't necessarily have been as attached to it as like putting it in the vehicle in the agency of Link in his world. Like, that allows people to identify with it easier because they sort of accept, like, oh, this I like these types of games, so I'm willing to allow Link and this world to be a little bit different. Right. And I'm willing to like let him take me by the hand. And so I think you end up liking it more, both because of your endearment to the franchise and also because you trust the franchise to treat you a certain way.
Well, I think for me the thing ends up being just like, be really honest with yourself about that. Like, as a critic, I do my best not to deny that when that's the case, right? Like, yes, there are things that I enjoy more. When I played a lot of Dragon Ball Xenoverse, it was because it was specifically giving me a Dragon Ball fantasy that I've had since I was like a 12-year-old boy. Like, that's part of the experience, and as a writer, I want to engage with that. If you look at what I wrote about Galaxy, it was the same thing. They're like, oh, I like this game partially because I think it's like a really fun action roguelike, but also because I love mechs and I love space anime, and this feels the way those do. And so, what the critic should be doing is being aware of the way that theming and setting and characters can help. Though also, it's probably worth saying that like the opposite is true, right? Which is like, I bet those Sword Art Online games are probably okay. I don't have any fondness for that world or those characters, and so that's an extra obstacle for me to ever actually playing those games.
Or that,
What about chapter 16.5?
I never liked
it. You brought up Sword Art. What were you saying, Patrick?
It was that Heroes game that came out like the early part of 2016.
Heroes Gemini Reborn.
Yeah, that I've written and talked about, that like Vinny Caravella at Giant Bomb that you've mentioned. It's like it's a pretty great like game with like weird like time travel and psychic powers that is completely undercut by being associated with the terrible Heroes franchise, where people aren't going to click on that because, one, it's a licensed game, B, it's a licensed game based on Heroes, and so that is an instance in which it subtracts from your ability to have an open mind about the experience and your ability to even perceive the idea that this could be something I might enjoy, because why would I want to play a game based on Heroes?
Totally. Yeah. Right. And that can be tough. Or there's the other thing, which is like you can do this in a way that's not just about a history of a specific game, right? Like, but it can be the history of a genre or something, right? Like, I definitely went through a period where I really didn't like the fantasy genre in general, and that almost kept me from getting into like the Dragon Age series, which I actually like a lot. Mm-hmm. But like, that is a difficult thing to get a hump to get over. And again, like, I just feel like the key is to just be like really upfront and reflective on terms of like what it is you like and don't like when you go into a thing.
Yeah, for me, like, I think I brought up this game a bunch, but Ni No Kuni was like one of my favorite games of 2013, and I was really excited about it because of Studio Ghibli's involvement, and I grew attached to the characters. And now the next one that's coming out, Studio Ghibli is not involved.
I didn't know they weren't involved. Mm-mm. Oh wow.
So am I looking forward to it? Sure, but I don't know that I'll like pre-order, you know, the like collector huge bundle like edition I did with the original. So
yeah, that's the thing, is like I think that there is, and I do want to say also, I think that we can do our best to be at a critical remove and like be, not to ever be really truly disinterested, but like I did my best to hang up my previous dislike of the Zelda series when I went into Zelda, right? Like, I do my best when I go into like Persona 5 when I'm playing it. I'm obviously thinking about the past Persona games, but I'm also trying my best to let it stand on its own and thinking about it from that perspective.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just like, be aware, you know? And don't be afraid to say, yeah, I like this because I happen to like Star Wars a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a totally valid reason to like a thing. Don't let anybody fucking shame you for liking Star Wars Battlefront because it has Star Wars in it. Star Wars is dope. You like Star Wars. That's okay.
Yeah.
Like,
thanks, Dad.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what, son? You're allowed to. You could be the Jedi one day if you try. You could be the one that brings balance to the Force, Patrick.
Oh, perfect.
I have seen a ton of people who have been very vocal about their dislike of Zelda come out after Breath of the Wild, you know, was released and say, oh, hey, wait. Zelda's actually good.
Right. Or just like Nintendo in general. There are a lot of people who have like a very dismissive, like the person who wrote in last week, but even people who I generally have come out and said just like, Nintendo is for children, or like anything Nintendo makes is shitty. Or is,
and
like,
so what if kids like Nintendo games and like, who cares?
Yeah.
So what if like, we've been playing Zelda games since – I've been playing Zelda games since I was 4. The first video game I ever played was Link to the Past.
Right.
So, like, I don't give a shit. Like, let me feel nostalgic and let me feel, like, free as, like, a 27-year-old playing this game for 40 hours.
I also feel like we fucked up by not talking – not forcing people to talk about nostalgia in a more productive and nuanced way around Breath of the Wild a little bit. Not that we have the keys to the discourse kingdom.
Yeah.
I fucking wish that would be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think about some of the great writing that came out last year or 2 years ago when Ernest Cline's Armada came out. The Ernest Cline had written Ready Player One, which is a book I don't like in any way. And then when Armada came out, his follow-up to that, it also read like the same sort of like deep love in for the past. And the thing that came out of that was some really great writing around the notion of nostalgia. I'm going to just read a little thing from...
The knives were out for that book.
They
People
fucking
have been
were.
Sharpening them since Ready Player One came out and said, ha ha, we got you, Ernest.
The thing that Laura Hudson wrote for Slate for that was... let me just find like the right kind of jumping on point here. The sins of Klein's era-specific obsessions and wafer-thin characters were forgivable, given the effervescent pleasures of his geek culture mashup. With Armada, though, Klein finally has the opportunity to address the question of whether his work has legs beyond the crutch of his referential obsessions. The answer is no. Our fantasies can tell us a great deal about ourselves, and the fact that Klein's work has often been trumpeted as the ultimate quote-unquote nerdgasm or some sort of apotheosis of nerd culture should be troubling to anyone who identifies with the label. There is nothing wrong with nostalgia on its own. Our love for the media of our youth, and more importantly for the qualities that made us love it in the first place, is not only worth remembering, but also capable of sparking new and wonderful creations, so long as we're able to distinguish inspiration from imitation. It's a valuable question for gaming culture and nerd culture more generally to ask itself. Do we want to tell stories that make sense of the things we used to love, that help us remember the reasons we were so drawn to them, and create new works that inspire that level of devotion? Or do we simply want to hear the litany of our childhood repeated back to us like an endless lullaby for the rest of our lives? And I think Zelda, the new Zelda, Breath of the Wild, does the former. Mm-hmm. It really does try to make sense of why people fell in love with that series to begin with. It really did help push the series in a new direction that kind of underlines or outlines all of the reasons why we fell in love with that feeling of adventure and exploration to begin with. And so I do want to figure out a way to leverage the word nostalgia here, but only in or in its most positive form, mm-hmm. instead of using it as a watchword or like as purely a negative, which is great. So, all right, I think that might do it for us this week.
Cool.
Not this week. This Monday. I do that a lot.
I mean, we do have to figure out Monday. This week, though, because Thursday, you, Danielle, and I are driving up to Boston, and we will
be at PAX. We're doing a couple things
weekend.
At PAX.
Yeah.
Danielle will be on the 404ing It panel with Pat Baer, and I think Jeff Gerstmann is going to be on that one this time, and some other folks. All three of us will be on the League of Heels.
Yes.
PAX, not Rumble.
PAXomania.
PAXomania, yeah. Thank you. Got to prep for that. I got to get in the character.
We got to get to the punching bags, you know, and get ready.
Yeah, I know. Listen.
We got to spar.
I'm not going to spar with you.
Why? Are you scared?
I'm busy.
Oh, my gosh. An excuse.
I'll be doing a panel with some great folks on the notion of authorship in games, whether or not the author is dead, whether or not authorship has value, et cetera, et cetera. What else is happening at PAX? Just walking around?
We'll be running around doing a lot of shit.
Yeah. We might do some streams from there, depending on how stuff shakes out.
We got a party pad. Just want to let everyone know. It's an Airbnb. We're going to be partying.
We don't have a party pad. I don't even know if we have that Airbnb.
A party pad actually sounds like it could be used for a lot of stranger things.
Yes. Yes, Patrick.
Anyway.
We do not have a party pad.
We'll be at PAX.
Party pad is
what
you give to someone after they've been partying.
True. Yeah.
Oh, you got to put out the party pad. Danica has been partying too much.
Way too hard.
Yep. So you got to figure out the podcast schedule.
We'll figure out the podcast schedule. I'd love to get Rob on at some point. Maybe we'll pre-record an episode for Friday so that we can introduce Rob to our listeners. What else? You can find everything we do on Twitter. Where can people – hey, Danica, as our social editor, where can you people find us on the internet?
People can find us at twitter.com/waypoint, waypointoc.deviantart.com.
I hate you.
Waypoint.vice.com, facebook.com/waypointvice, Poplio – what is it? Poplio Pals? I forget what the
How
Poplio one is.
How
are
you
going to
forget our Poplio one?
I don't remember.
I'm not going to tell you.
I haven't played Pokemon Sun and Moon yet. Mm-hmm. Poplio something dot what?
Because it's not that. I don't think it's Poplio something dot com.
You don't even know what it is. How are you getting mad at me?
You're the one who brought it up. You're the one who brought it up.
Anyway, yeah, you can find us at a bunch of places. But most importantly, waypointoc.deviantart.com.
I can't with you.
I thought it was Poplio Pals. I don't remember. Anyway, you can find me.
Wow.
At Austin_Walker.
And you find me at Danica Harad. Is that not right?
Herod. You said it right when we started.
It's never going to correct itself. We're too far in.
Good. That's good.
Where can people find you, Patrick?
You can find me at 1414 East Tunnel Hama in Los Angeles. No, Louisiana, the location of the Party Pad, a great place for kids to play games and have fun.
Gosh.
That was a free ad,
partypad.co.
Really? They couldn't get .com?
Well, let's see where partypad.com goes.
Partypad.
It goes to my house.
This amazing domain is for sale. Please contact us with your offer, domains@partypad.com.
It's a real thing. That's not even at like a domain site. Like they got it, and they're like, no, we're setting it up.
Partypad.net. This website is unavailable.
Well, I mean, we can get that.
Partypad.org.
Partypad.zone?
Partypad.org just goes to an admin panel. I feel like there's a Russian hacker somewhere in here.
Oh, boy, this is no good.
It says not secure. You can find me at Patrick Klubik and writing on Waypoint.
Thank you so much, Patrick. Stay tuned, everybody. This week's going to be some good stuff. We're going to figure out some streams. We're going to figure out how to play some cool things, some dope games, I think, dropped this week.
We always got to figure stuff out.
That's where we're at. Let us know, as always, what you're up to and what you're playing. You can write us at gamingadvice.com. Use the subject questions to get your questions into the bucket.
Yep.
I think that's going to do it for us this Monday. Yeah, I know. I know all about Bowen. Waypoint.zone/BOEN. Also, you can check out Bowen's music in Snipper Clips.
Yeah, it's in Snipper Clips.
Bowen, who does our great theme, Miss You, off of his EP, Pale Machine, also is in Snipper Clips doing the soundtrack to that. So check that out. We actually did a stream on Friday that included some Snipper Clips, some Zelda. That'll go up sometime early this week. So
cool.
Check out
YouTube. Put out the party pad before you play Snipper Clips, though.
You got to put out that party pad just in case. Just in case. All right, everyone. Catch you on Wednesday for a stream, probably. Peace.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.